What's up, Open Floor Globe?
I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm thrilled to be here today with not one but two special guests for today's very special show. On the other line are my Sports Illustrated colleagues, Chris Herring, Rohan Nadkarni, and Howard Beck, who is also the co-host of SI's Crossover Pod. So subscribe to that feed if you do not already. I believe, Howard, this is also your first, I don't know if we're calling this a guest appearance or a co-hosting venture, but this is your first time on the Open Floor feed, I believe. Is that correct?
I think so. I don't think I ever was on it back in the day before I was at SI. I don't think any, I was never important enough to be given that honor as a guest. But this is also a Open Floor crossover.
Wow.
Because we're going to run this on both feeds. That sounds really complicated. I hope it doesn't like open some rift in the space-time continuum.
Yes.
Mannix was supposed to be here, but I heard he got his hand caught in his hair gel bottle, and he's going to be out for a couple weeks. So, fortunately, no Chris Mannix.
Yes. Rohan, thank you so much for that update. Yes, this whole thing is breaking my brain a little bit. Fellas, the Milwaukee Bucks are world champions. Giannis Antetokounmpo is the emperor of the universe. The strangest NBA season of all time is over. One of the better NBA finals in recent memory is finished. I have an outline that I wrote and that I shared with you guys for today's episode that I feel like we're going to get just thrown off track pretty quickly trying to process everything. But before we get started, per usual, I just want to shout out all of our listeners and all the emails that they've been sending in. They've been off the charts. Fantastic. Please keep them coming throughout the offseason to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. That also applies to the loyal listeners of the Crossover Pod, too, if you want to bother Rohan or Chris or anything with your wonderful ideas. Please send them in. Okay, so today's show is going to be about the finals, Giannis, the Bucks, the Suns, Chris Paul, Devin Booker. Being the gracious host I am as the introducer of this episode, I want to start by ceding the floor to Mr. Howard Beck. What stood out to you watching last night's game, watching it just unfold as magically as it did? Just what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Howard?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is that Giannis was not going to let this opportunity slip. I mean, that had to be among the greatest, if not the greatest, and we always are caught up in the moment and are prisoners of the moment, but among the greatest closeouts in history. A 50-point game to shut the door for his first championship after a season like this, with a team like this, with all the unlikelihood of the season, all the unlikelihood of this team, of this finals, the fact that they started down 2-0, the fact that he started with a knee that had buckled a week before the finals and looked like he shouldn't be playing at all and might be limited. People like me saying, man, you know what? Suns might win this one at 5 if Giannis isn't right. Well, I guess Giannis was okay. It's just one of the greatest exclamation points on one of the most unlikely and also just joyful runs. And look, every championship is joyful in its own way. And I think about the Warriors winning their first, which was another one that we didn't see coming at the time back in 2015. And this feels a lot like that. You know, Giannis last night was maybe Steph Curry in 2015. There's a certain joy to his game, loves his teammates, loves competing with them, loves dominating, but in his own unique way, and pulled together a group that nobody really could see coming. And there's a bunch of other stuff in the wake of it that we can get to later, but there's a lot of the emotions of the night that really stand out to me that were in just kind of moments of humanity. But if nothing else from a basketball level, just the fact that Giannis saw his opportunity, the Suns made their runs, They were competitive. They were a worthy opponent again in Game 6, but Giannis wasn't letting this thing go.
Chris, I'll throw the ball in your direction. Just what were you thinking when you were watching Game 6 and how it all just sort of unfolded?
I think Howard hit the nail on the head with some of it, but the one thing that there's anything I really didn't see coming, which feels like a cheap thing to point out, but Giannis making 17 of 19 free throws. What I kept thinking after a while was, the world is going to be in trouble if this dude can start making 17 out of 19 free throws. He would get 50 quite often if he was able to do that. But again, you know, to the point of that being one of the best closeouts we've ever seen, he tied the record for most points in a finals closeout game with 50. That was with 14 rebounds. That was with 5 blocks. Several other shots, you know, the way we talk about Rudy Gobert, where he just completely alters shots or makes people decide not to shoot because of the sort of defender he is within certain proximity. There was one play where I watched Devin Booker get all the way to the rim, and then he just kind of looked up. I mean, he might as well have been looking at, like, the Empire State Building or something. When he looked up at Giannis, he said, oh, I'm not going there with that. And just looked to kick the ball back out. And, like, and we've seen Devin Booker. He clearly wants to shoot, particularly in fourth quarters. What did he get to game 6? And I think he got his first assist of the fourth quarter last night, which is, like, a wild stat. But the guy wasn't giving up the ball for anything and at that point in the game. But, like, when Giannis is standing there, he has to. So, I mean, just an all-time dominant performance for someone that I think what's coolest about this from the Giannis perspective, we were poking holes in this man. I was guilty of it. I mean, I don't think unfairly, even though he was solid in that Brooklyn series, he was not the best player for long stretches of that Brooklyn series. And it was going to kind of prompt an examination of kind of like, what are we doing here? This would be 2 years, 3 years in a row of playoff failure where really they were favored or that they should have had a good chance given what they were looking at across the aisle from them. But he stepped it up, and not just that he stepped it up, but did it on what looked like a really horrific injury and bounced back from that to be the most athletic player in this series and the most dominant player in the series, to where it's very rare I say I agree with Nick Wright. But he said something yesterday that if Giannis had gotten ejected before the game started yesterday and not played, and somehow Middleton carried them to a win with 40 last night, that Giannis still was the MVP, and he's 100% right. I mean, it just, he was that dominant. And I was like Howard. I think I said I would pick Phoenix in 5 if Giannis couldn't play at all, and I would take Phoenix in 6 if he could, and he looked, resembled himself but wasn't completely himself. I didn't anticipate him being better than his normal self. Off the injury he was coming off of, I think, you know, he was doubtful and then questionable and then was playing in game 1. And then it was like, well, damn, if he was this good, why wasn't he playing in the last series? Just an incredible showing. And the sort of thing I think you can be happy about, even if you're not a Bucks fan, just, you know, the fact that Giannis is a guy that stayed, that really hasn't made excuses, that is humble by all accounts, just a fun team to watch, as Phoenix was a fun team to watch. And I just really enjoyed this final series.
Yeah, I was not expecting the coronation of Giannis Antetokounmpo at so many different points throughout the postseason, and for us to actually get there was wild. I have one quick stat. This man shot 84.1% in the restricted area in the NBA Finals, taking 10 shots in the restricted area per game. That is not human. The other team is trying to stop him. Their number one focus on defense is to stop him from getting to the rim. He just got to the rim whenever he wanted. Rohan, what was your takeaway from Game 6? Please tell us that it is not about Giannis Antetokounmpo, because we've already talked about him enough. So
it's funny. It actually kind of dovetails, I think, with what Chris and Howard are saying. First of all, like, all credit to the Bucks. You know, Mike, I think we talked about this podcast at several points during the playoffs, how it felt like at many times they were the most underwhelming team in the playoffs because our expectations were so high, because we wanted to see that heavyweight fight with Brooklyn, and it turned into a slog of an injured team versus the Bucks. But all credit to them, stepping up when it matters most. That's all you can ask for. I'm a huge Chris Paul fan. Some may even say Chris Paul apologist. I'm the person who is trying to, like, make excuses for every playoff defeat he's ever had. I think he's only had really one truly inexcusable loss in his playoff career. That was a 3-1 blown lead. And when I'm watching Giannis, and I had the privilege again of seeing him in game 2 when he scored 20 points in that one quarter, which at the time I thought, how does he ever top a performance like this? And he arguably had 2 better games after that. When you see someone so physically dominant as Giannis, I've always believed if Chris Paul was the same height as Dwayne Wade, he would have had a better career. He's that smart of a basketball player. He's that.
I love that take. I love that take, by the way.
He's so. You look at him, like, attacking Giannis in switches with no fear, and it feels awful to say this, but it feels like because of his stature, there is almost a ceiling on his game. Unless you're. There's a reason why point guards are rarely the best players on championship teams. And unless you have literally a once in a lifetime, once in a universe skill like Steph Curry, who can shoot like literally no one ever has before, it just felt like when you're watching that game, it's, I was thinking about this when I was writing about the Suns stay, it's Chris Paul finished one spot behind Giannis in MVP voting during the regular season. And I don't think anyone questioned that. He was that valuable to his team. But then when you watch a playoff series like that, you wonder how they could be so close when Giannis is so much more physically dominant. And watching that game, it just, it made me think about, will Chris Paul ever get a chance like this again? And the fact that he can't take over a game physically in the way some of the other stars in this league can, it makes his career that much more tragic in a way. In the dramatic sense, like it's, you know, he finally reached it. He went up 2-0. And then there's truly, even though he probably on some level was like, yeah, put me on Giannis, I'll guard him. Like he won't move me on the post. Like on some level, there's just nothing he can do when someone that physically dominant is on the other side. And I was just thinking about the Suns a lot. I have so much respect for Monty Williams. And I love what Chris Paul, frankly, brings to the NBA. You know, people were obviously commending Giannis, and I'm sure we'll get into it, what he said about super teams and staying in Milwaukee, et cetera. You know, to a degree, I think Chris Paul has been that guy. He has superstar friends that he never tried to team up with. You know, unlike what Magic Johnson says, he doesn't call LeBron as soon as he, you know, hits free agency, et cetera. He doesn't try to make friends around the league. And, you know, he did it his own way up until the very end of this series, and I have a lot of respect for him for that.
There's like a million different directions we can go in right now. We're already about to just go off the rails, tumbling on fire.
Good.
But Chris Paul, real quick, 26 points, team high last night, 11 for 19 from the floor. And I mean, I thought he played like a masterful basketball game. Jeff Van Gundy was pointing it out on the broadcast, but Phoenix's offensive attack was essentially force the switch with Giannis and then put Giannis in a pick and roll on Chris Paul. And Chris Paul was getting whatever shot he wanted, and he was hitting most of them. A couple of them rimmed out. You can't really help that. They're long twos that were contested. But I thought that he played a really fabulous game, and it is kind of heartbreaking to see them hold the 2-0 lead and then lose four straight. I mean, I guess I'll just there's so many, again, so many different directions we can go in, but I guess I'll just say, like, do you guys have the sense? I know it's we want to congratulate the Bucks for winning, obviously, but do you have the sense, or have you ever felt the sense since the series ended that the Suns kind of, I don't want to say blew it, but kind of let a championship slip through their fingers? Maybe any of you guys can just jump on that question.
I wouldn't say so. I don't have a lot to elaborate on that, but no, I wouldn't say so. I mean, the only time I think you say that, it looks that way because of, you know, I know Seth Partnow loves the idea of sequencing, that we are, you know, we are taken, led astray by sequencing. They win the first two, they lose the next four. Okay, so they had a 2-0 lead. They blew a 2-0 lead. That's, we love doing the blue something leads. I mean, okay, that's the order it happened in. If it had been 1-1, 1-1 all the way, and then, you know, then it's tied 2-2, and then the Bucks win the last. I mean, would we think about it the same way as slipping through their fingers? I mean, I don't know. It's the only time you can definitively say that is if somebody clearly had the better talent or screwed something up royally. And I don't think you could say either of those things about the Phoenix Suns. And Chris Paul was definitely limited. Like, for all the numbers he put up, even last night, there were a couple times the ball just skipped out of his hand magically. Not magically. Mm-hmm. It's because he's got, like, nerve damage or whatever in his wrist or whatever the hell is going on with his hands. Like, there were times the ball just skittered away from him, not because somebody else forced it. And I thought, that's not a Chris Paul turnover. That's injury. And that's not to make excuses. Like, okay, everybody's banged up, and Giannis's knee bent the wrong way. But there are circumstances. Did the Suns have clearly better talent? No. Did they have many playmakers? You know, with Chris Paul semi-limited, and then Devin Booker's your other playmaker, who else is making plays on that team? The Bucks had more playmakers. And I think the Suns were overall the younger, less experienced team, even though they had the one guy, Jay Crowder, with finals experience. So no, I don't see this as the Suns blowing anything. The Bucks took this. The Bucks earned this.
Yeah, just to piggyback, I feel like what really stood out to me what Howard said is I would have felt if the Suns had the best player in the series and they lost, I would have said maybe they blew it. You know, it wasn't like the Warriors in 2016, who I think frankly had a huge talent advantage over the Cavs. And, you know, you could say that about the 2011 Heat, I think, to a degree. But, you know, Giannis to me was just so far and away the best player in the series that he was so physically overwhelming that I don't know that you could say the Suns blew it. I do think that they let a golden opportunity slip in the sense that we all acknowledge this was a weird season. They get the Anthony Davis injury. They get the Jamal Murray injury. I'm not saying that this team wasn't talented enough to make it to the finals or it's a fluke or it doesn't count, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying any of that. But it's hard to imagine them having a more favorable path ever again. And I think that is what has to really hurt right now, because as good as Chris Paul is, as it's never a guarantee that you're going to make it back. And the fact that all these dominoes kind of fell in their favor, that I think is what makes it extra hard for them right now.
Yeah, I would add too, to kind of what both of you all said, Howard and Rohan. Look, the Phoenix has maybe the one thing that you have to have to be successful in the playoffs, which is enough of a shot variety to be able to take shots that are difficult shots and make them. And, you know, throughout chunks of this series, Devin Booker was hitting those shots. Even last night was hitting some of those shots. But even when he made them, it's like, that's if that's the shot you're getting consistently, that's a really hard shot to win a title with. And quite frankly, you know, as much as I sang the praise, I think we all did, of DeAndre Ayton.
He looked young for the first time.
You probably need a lot more out of him, in particular when Booker doesn't have it going or can't hit those really difficult shots. Or when Chris Paul is, you know, being hounded by Drew Holiday. You know, it just gets difficult. And my thing, even when Booker had it going and was getting 40 and these massive fourth quarters, guys fall out of a rhythm when he has to dominate the ball. I was looking at it yesterday, and his average time of possession in the series per time he touched the ball was like five and a half seconds, which is just, it just feels too long against a defense where you're trying to break guys down. And, you know, PJ Tucker is one of the shorter guys that you're being defended by. Like, it just doesn't work. It could have worked, you know, obviously it just takes him getting hot, maybe one or two more games, but it's hard to do that. And it's a team that really excelled at the mid range. But if that's really the only shot you can get against that team, and they're going to outscore you from the free throw line by a ton, because Giannis made more free throws than the Suns did last night. And, you know, it's funny, I tweeted that last night and people were like, oh, but, you know, Giannis is going to the basket. Don't tweet that because it's misleading. No, but that's the whole point. Giannis is going to the basket, and it really hurts you when he makes all his free throws, because what are you supposed to do with that if you're Phoenix? So to get that far and not win it, knowing that, yeah, they, you know, the Suns obviously did get some help with some of the injuries that they were up against. They had their own, too, with Chris Paul's. And, you know, I don't think the Šarić injury was a small thing by the end, because – every time Ayton was in foul trouble, it meant Frank Kaminsky was coming out, which, holy hell. But, you know, this was tough. And I remember Michael asking me in maybe our last podcast when, or maybe the one before that, I can't remember, when the Suns were up 2-0 or maybe when it was 1-0. And you asked me, who's got more pressure here to win this thing? Is it Phoenix or is it Milwaukee? And I said Milwaukee because Brooklyn's coming. Brooklyn's going to be there. And, you know, it's feasible to look at how Phoenix has the makings of a team that could be there for the next few years. Even if that's true, it's tough to leave this one on the table for sure, because you had a 2-0 lead and you let it get away from you a little bit. Not that they did anything wrong, but Milwaukee made adjustments, and it just didn't seem like Phoenix had enough to come back from those adjustments that Milwaukee made.
Yeah, it was totally heartbreaking, and we're going to definitely pivot back towards Milwaukee in a second, but I want to stick with Phoenix here. It felt like a stars are aligning type of season for them, a type of postseason run. Mostly, Rohan, you mentioned this, but like the bracket just broke in their favor so dramatically with AD going down, with Jamal Murray not being available and them not having to play the Portland Trailblazers, who flamed out in the first round, and obviously Kawhi Leonard then partially tearing his ACL in the conference finals. They don't have to deal with one of the best players alive. So from that perspective,
I heard he's just day-to-day. He's just day-to-day. He'll
yeah,
be fine.
That's still,
Kawhi
that's
will be fine. Day-to-day yes, for a latest. Solid 18 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that straightforward injury reporting, LA Clippers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, not that we couldn't see through it.
I was going to say, is it the Clippers who are not being straightforward? I'll just leave that out there. I'll just leave that out there.
Beautiful. Well, anyway, on that point, you know, we just were talking about Chris Paul, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I feel like it should be mentioned. He has a $44.2 million player option for next season. I want to repeat that number, $44.2 million. And I'm seeing reports that the Los Angeles Lakers are interested in him and the New York Knicks, et cetera. I personally find those laughable. If you guys, I'm going to posit it this way. If you guys were Chris Paul, what would you do this offseason? Would you stick around? No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Can I just tell a quick Chris Paul story?
Does it answer my question?
A little bit. A little bit. A little bit. If it's, a little bit.
It better be relevant, Rowan.
I promise you it's so relevant.
Because the way you asked, can I tell the story, made it sound like it wasn't going to be relevant at all.
I promise you it's so relevant. I promise you it's so relevant.
We'll be the judge.
You're going to be shocked at the relevance.
Okay.
So I had the pleasure of interviewing and sitting down with Chris Paul in Oklahoma City in December of 2019. And this was, you know, back when he was, quote unquote, one of the worst contracts in the league. And it was just around this time of year. I got fortunate. I got to Oklahoma City right in the middle of a win streak. And it was just around this time of year where people were like, hold on, like Chris Paul's doing some good things in Oklahoma City. He's playing really well. I remember him telling me about his vegan diet and all these things he was doing then. And I asked him point blank. I was like, I need to know, would you ever decline your option to facilitate a trade to a championship contender? And he literally said, no chance. None. And I remember a night later, I was at like a charity event at Target, and he was with his brother, CJ, and they were joking. And he was like, CJ, this guy asked me if I was going to turn down my option. And, you know, they're joking about, you know, Chris was like, I'm going to be waving that Brinks truck into my house. And I do think he weirdly has some responsibility as the head of the union also, that I think it's going to be a really bad look if he were to do something like opt out and take like a mid-level exception to go play with the Lakers. I also think deep down there's a part of him that will, he himself will never accept a ring that comes as the sixth guy. You know, I think he's got to at least be in the top two of the pecking order for it to mean something to him. So to answer your question with all of that kind of information, the only way I see him opting out is if he knows he has another bird in hand, which is a long-term contract with, you know, a good amount of money over multiple years. It's going to have to be a lot of money. And I don't think it's a done deal that he's back in Phoenix. I don't think that, you know, that's 100% certainty. But I have a hard time imagining him, even after all this, I just think it means too much to him to do something like join LeBron, because I think he knows what people will say. And I think he'll know deep down it won't mean the same. But I'm not saying he'd never do it. I just still would be surprised if it happened now.
Can I just say that shout out to you for being like, can I tell a story here? Because that was a good story.
There we go.
I was worried for a minute there.
And was a good story.
Yeah, for a minute, I thought it was going to be a Rohan story instead of a Chris Paul story, and it kind of was veering there, but it got there. It got okay, there, so kudos.
It was relevant.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But yeah, that's just, you know, I'd be a little surprised. I don't know if you guys feel differently.
So here's the way I look at it. I'm gonna go straight to the like sappy Hallmark reading of this. As the oldest dad on this podcast, Chris Paul and Monty Williams hugging twice. Once, I believe, when they clinched their way to the conference finals, and then once when they clinched their way to the finals, were two of the most poignant emotional moments of this postseason and of this season period. the bond that they have that goes all the way back to their days in New Orleans when Monty's a first-time head coach and Chris Paul is on his rookie deal, and reuniting all these years later with an opportunity that neither of them could have seen coming, with a bond that they could have never known they would get to reform, with a team that nobody could have possibly seen being this ready, was so magical and just such a strong, the resonance of it was so just powerful. Walking away from that, not to mention the money they can give him as the ones who hold his bird rights and can either work off of this contract, he can opt out and they can build off that, they could go off of that, whatever they want to do. Proximity to his home in LA, quick hour flight, less than that. All those things. Why in the world would he leave the Phoenix Suns? Certainly not for the Knicks or any team in the East, period. Certainly not to try to go head-to-head with the Nets and the Bucks and everything else in the East. And I know the West is no picnic either, but he's got a team that he already knows had the second-best record and nearly the best record in the regular season as it was. And with a young team that's just going to keep taking steps, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, these guys should only be better next year. And the Suns now, Phoenix used to be a destination market in this league. It's been a long time. But this version of the Phoenix Suns, with this coach, this front office, these stars, should draw guys. They should be a team that can get some guys to come cheap if they were to lose a campaign or anybody else. They're in good position. There's no reason for him to leave. I agree with Ron that there's no reason for Chris, that Chris Paul would absolutely cringe at the idea of looking as if he were riding LeBron's coattails to go join him on a small contract just for the sake of winning with LeBron and AD. I think there's maybe a little emotional resonance there too, though, that just that those guys are really tight. Never mind that LeBron crapped on every decision the union made this year that Chris Paul was central to. But I do think that those guys would enjoy winning together. But I generally agree that that's not the path Chris Paul would want to take. Not when he thinks he can get there on his own with the team he's already on. I don't think, we don't need to get into a whole union debate, I don't think he has any union responsibilities here. If he wants to take less money, the whole point of a union is to give you the options to do whatever the hell you want to do. If he wants to take less money to go somewhere else to chase a championship, because that's what would make him happy at this stage of his career, having already made a bloody fortune, by all means, he should. That's not going to negate or undermine the next guy's ability to demand the max. He can do whatever he wants. Carmelo and Gary Payton once teamed up to join the Lakers at the end of their careers and took much, much less than they were due. Certainly, they were not union officers at the time, but still, they were all-time stars. You do what you got to do. Everybody in this league understands that.
Can I mention one complication here, which is, the Suns are going to get really expensive. Now, next year is really is why I think Paul probably won't leave. I think the most likely scenario is Paul opts in, Phoenix runs this back one more year. But once the Ayton and Bridges extensions kick in, I don't see the Suns keeping Paul, Booker, Ayton, and Bridges all on super expensive deals, especially with Paul at that point pushing 38, 39. Next year is going to be his age 37 season. So I do think next year is probably the only year they really run it back. I mean, maybe Robert Sarver's had a little bit of a change of heart since the mid-2000s when a lot of people argue he was penny-pinching when he had Steve Nash in a title
contender. Oh, he was. It's not
he
argued.
Was. Yeah. He was the charitable.
He has been one of the cheapest owners
in
the NBA.
Thank you, Howard, for saying that.
He has been one of the cheapest owners in the NBA, which is why it's right for you to bring up the point. Yeah. He may not want to pay this, even if he does see a championship possibility.
So, which is what the small complication is, because I think if Paul is definitely looking for years, I'd be surprised if Phoenix gives him 3 years. Unless that just kicks off a whole cascade of, do you trade Bridges? Do you trade Cam Johnson? You know, that's going to set off a whole list of complications. So I think the most likely scenario is he opts in, this entire group gives it one more year. Hopefully they bring in another vet or two to kind of supplement what's going on. But I see this as this version of the Suns happening for one more year at the most.
Chris, do you think that the Suns are going to – what odds would you put the Suns at of getting back to the finals, assuming that Chris Paul opts in or resigns or just stays in Phoenix? Because I don't know. I am high on DeAndre Ayton. I am high on Mikal Bridges. I am high on all these guys, Devin Booker, et cetera. I personally just can't get by the path that they had and the ease with which it was just – it was so fortuitous for them. So do you think that the Suns can actually get back to the finals or not?
I think they can. I think the team that we don't even think or talk about much is Golden State next year. I mean, I'm hopeful that Klay will come back healthy. I think people are forgetting now that he's had two pretty serious injuries, or I guess just one, but that, you know, the rehab didn't go completely according to plan, you know, before he could come back. So that's not a given. But, you know, if he comes back and, you know, Golden State is pretty obviously sitting there with the trade asset that they could try to shift into something else, maybe you could call Wiggins an asset right now as well. So, I mean, if they decide to really make a play for somebody, for a Siakam or something like that on top of getting Klay back, you know, that makes it more challenging for a team like Phoenix. Obviously, the Lakers, if they're healthy, they make for a little bit more of a challenge than what they showed in the first round. I don't think Phoenix falls way down the pecking order. I don't think it's as dramatic as what people are saying. I think they could very easily run this back and try to maybe tweak some things here and there, assuming you're not going to get campaign back and other people, that you go out and you get maybe a couple other guys that can create a little bit more, who can get maybe some easier shots for other people. You certainly go get some backup big help.
I don't know about that. You got Frank Kaminsky waiting there, two-headed monster.
He actually played well in Game Six.
He played well out of his mind in Game Six.
That might be his career highlight.
I still want him nowhere near my team next year if I'm running that show. So I mean, I don't think people are out on them necessarily, but like I see how they could get back to this stage.
I mean,
I don't think it was just sheer injury luck or anything that they got to this stage in the first place. But I don't know that I would give anybody in the West better than like a 35% or 40% chance of getting to that place. I just think it's going to be tough, but I don't think that means Phoenix shouldn't run this back.
I'd say they have the fourth best odds.
Behind who?
I got the Lakers
Rohan, do you have the Utah Jazz number one, I assume, right?
Yeah. Once they trade Gobert for a melange of, you know, do you think they can get Aaron Baines back and some maybe a wing development guy?
You remember when you said this might go off the rails, Michael?
Yeah. I was not expecting Aaron Baines to get shouted out. Baines and Andrew Wiggins, incredible stuff.
I think the Lakers and Nuggets are going to be ahead of them. The Clippers, I mean, it just depends what happens with Kawhi. No one knows. And then, like, you know, Chris mentioned the Warriors. Imagine if the Warriors can credibly roll out Steph, Klay, Dre, Siakam, Wiseman starting five, which would be nuts. And, yeah. They just got
Siakam without giving up Wiseman?
I think that the 7-14 in Wiggins, do you think that would do it or no chance?
I'm Toronto. I'm not doing that.
No. Okay. No. All right. Maybe not. Well, either way, I think that Steph, Dre, and Klay alone is a hell of a trio, and we've never seen them that three be anything less than wildly successful. So yeah, I say this. I would love for the Suns to make it. I just think that the road is going to be exponentially harder this point.
I agree there. I mean, listen, that part of it. You know, we can all say these things are not contradictory. We can all acknowledge that the path got easier because of injuries without cheapening the accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Every year there are circumstances. The Suns were a legit finals team. The way I always frame it, this year and last year especially, these two strange pandemic years, the way you know if there should be an asterisk or not, and there's never an asterisk, but the way you can apply this is, do the teams in the finals look like legitimate finals contenders? Yeah. They did last year, they did this year. There was nobody you looked at and you go like, I don't know, how the hell did they get here? There was none of that. The Suns were legit. That said, coming back to a Western Conference at full strength, it's going to be really difficult. Jamal Murray probably is missing, what, a third to a half of the season, but is there when it matters for the Nuggets. And presuming that he's back to full strength, the Nuggets are one of the best teams in the West. We know that. The Jazz will be there most likely. There are certain assumptions we have to make about Klay Thompson and his health. Certain assumptions we have to make about LeBron, frankly, and his age and his health. But he defies that all the time. This past year, he didn't defy it. But he and AD have to be healthy because the drop-off from those guys to the rest of that Laker roster is steep. So there are caveats for all these teams. That's the thing. Like, there's it's really competitive, but it's simultaneously wide open. And the Clippers, I mean, Kawhi could miss all of next season. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what he'll look like when he gets back. You know, the guy who's already been load managed over the last few years and now is coming back from ACL surgery. So the Clippers, who were one of those teams you just penciled in at the top, I don't think you're penciling them as the top four team right now. I think Denver, Utah, Phoenix, and the Lakers, and then, you know, the Warriors are trying to squeeze in there, and then maybe the Clippers.
We haven't even talked about Luka yet, and if the Mavs maybe do something right this summer, yeah.
And the Mavs got a new front office. They'll be bold, I'm sure, and try to make some big moves to help Luka, and they've got some cap room to work with as well. I think the Suns will legitimately be in the mix again, but it's not a knock to say they're no guarantee, because all the other teams I just listed, I don't think there's any guarantee about either any of them either.
I don't think there is a favorite. No, I agree with 100% with everything that you guys are saying. I wouldn't say that the Lakers are a favorite, the Clippers, the Jazz, the Suns, any of these teams. And it kind of leads me to, this is a somewhat of a sharp pivot, but I do want to get back to Giannis and the Bucks, seeing as they just won the NBA championship last night. But I wrote a column that you can read now at SI.com about basically Giannis re-signing 10 years after LeBron's decision and LeBron leaving the Cleveland Cavaliers to sign with the Miami Heat and form a super team. Giannis re-signs for the Supermax before he had to with the Milwaukee Bucks. And I wrote a column about how the past decade was influenced, I think, in large part by player empowerment and LeBron's decision and the super teams that he created, the super team that Kevin Durant created going to the Golden State Warriors 5 years later. My question that I posited in that column was, is it possible that Giannis influences the next generation of superstars in a similar way that LeBron just did, in the sense that re-signing and staying put with the team that drafted you and winning it all. Not that it's, I don't really know how to phrase this because I don't want to denigrate anything that LeBron or KD did. It was their right to choose where they wanted to go. But not leaving, not abandoning the fan base and gutting through it with, gutting through hard times and having faith in the organization that selected you and re-signing and staying put and winning with what you have, really. And Giannis addressed this in his post-game press conference, saying that it was harder. It's easy to form a super team. He could have done that and won the title that way, but his route was harder. Do you guys think that there's any credence to that idea of players, you know, Luka, Zion, Ja Morant? You can go on and on with just different homegrown young players right now and franchise players. Do you think there's credence for these guys to look at what Giannis just did and say, I want to do that instead of I want to be on a super team?
Do you think Zion makes it to a second contract? Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I was going to say. Maybe I'm just cynical. I don't see it. And we've seen, like you said, with the player empowerment thing, I thought it was interesting that we saw kind of a number of guys, whether they were traded or wanted to be traded to their hometown team after LeBron went back to Cleveland. I thought that was kind of an interesting kind of undercurrent with LeBron maybe influencing some things too. But with this one, I just don't see it because, look, if a player – do we really think that if James Harden had waited and, you know, he was frustrated in Houston and now – let's say he had stayed in Houston last year. He's on the fence about whether he wants to be in Houston now going into this offseason, and then he watches Giannis do that. Do we really think that he's like less frustrated or that he's going to ask for more time to really think about it? Well, you know, he's not going to be more on the fence about it because Giannis won the title there. He's going to want to
leave. I don't
think
Harden might not be the greatest.
Maybe Harden's not the greatest example. but I don't think, I mean, in all seriousness, I don't think, I mean, the one guy I'll say is interesting for this conversation is obviously Lillard. Lillard is the one, you know. Mm. I tweeted the quote out from the media room yesterday that Giannis had, and everyone is like either tweeting that quote about, you know, I stayed here, this was the hard way to do it. And people were either taking that and quote tweeting it at Durant as a shot at him or like a Damian Lillard, please see this, please don't leave us sort of thing. So I think it's interesting for him, but if you're a young guy, like Rohan said, where like if you're Zion or you're someone where, you know, the clock is ticking and we know it. I mean, Luka at some point, depending on what happens with the Dallas front office and whether some of those moves work out, would be another guy to look at as well. I don't think it's going to stop guys from wanting out because they see it as more noble somehow to win a title with that original team. Like, you're still judged on rings, maybe not by us and maybe not by people that, you know, don't, you know, pit everything into black and white and we have some nuance. But, yeah, I mean, I just think Giannis is rare and he's a rare breed. He's got a really rare story and I think it worked out for him. And I also think that if he hadn't signed the Supermax and he just wins the title and now he's a free agent this summer, you know, he would have won the title with his original team. And, you know, it would have been, I guess Kawhi's situation was a little bit different, but he won a title with one team and then immediately left to go somewhere else. And, like, I think that's okay, too. It doesn't somehow make it less noble. Maybe it makes it more noble that you did it this way. But, I mean, I don't think it's going to change the way people think. I really don't. I just think the egos are too big. I think the demands are too great, and I think that people will want to do what they'll want to do, and I don't think that they'll be worried about, you know, is it the original market that I started with? That's just me, though.
Yeah, I mean, Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I agree with everything that you say there, Chris, and I put a lot of that in my story. I think the CBA, when the CBA comes out and they negotiate different rule changes to try to influence players to stay put, because that's, I think that is what the NBA wants to a certain degree, as opposed to just the acceleration of player movement that we've seen, particularly at the top. I think that will for sure influence things a little bit more than any one player's decision. But I think I think it's interesting and something more of a thought exercise than something that can be proven. But I think a lot of players do admire Giannis and they look at what he's doing and they're like, wow, that would be incredible if that happened to me.
It shows that in the right circumstances, your patience can be rewarded. Mm-hmm. But the reason that most guys of the last 10 years left when they did, either by forced trade or through free agency, most of them left because they had seen a dead end. And start with LeBron. Dead end. 60 wins, didn't matter. You're never going to get another superstar in Cleveland. He had to go get he understood. Michael needed Scottie, Magic needed Kareem, on and on and on throughout the course of NBA history. He wasn't getting that guy in Cleveland. So he made a decision, a really controversial at the time decision, and other guys followed that path in the years to come. But most of them did it because they saw a dead end. Chris Paul saw a dead end in New Orleans. Anthony Davis saw a dead end in New Orleans, and now Rohan wants Zion to leave tomorrow, even though he hasn't even signed a second deal yet. And every single rookie who has a max deal staring them in the face will sign their second deal. Zion will stay for at least the next several years. But for the guys who are looking at what Giannis did, it also, you know, they'll have to look at what the Bucks also did. Ownership was criticized, I think, somewhat rightly for letting Brogdon go, but then they're vindicated when they get Drew Holiday instead, and now they've won a championship, and nothing that they did that might have been a mistake matters because they won it all. But they went all out to get Drew Holiday. They went all out to make sure they kept Chris Middleton. They got Chris Middleton in the first place. They assembled a really smart roster around him. They went all out to go get PJ Tucker. Like, they did the things they had to do to put Giannis in the best place to win a championship, and then they won it. But also along with that, you know, somebody told me it was like 3 years ago when I was working on a story on Giannis, and they were saying, listen, I know you guys hear this stuff all the time, it sounds cliche, but Giannis is different. He's super loyal. He doesn't care about the spotlight. He doesn't care about LA and New York. He doesn't care about a big market. He doesn't care about playing with other superstars. None of these things matter to him. He wants to win. He wants to be the best player in the NBA. He wants to do it, if possible, in Milwaukee. It's not to say he would never leave. No one was ever saying he'll never leave Milwaukee. It was more that he doesn't need to. He doesn't feel that impulse that some guys do when they're in a small, cold weather market that's not a destination to say, oh, I got to go be in a glamour market. I got to have the spotlight. I got to have the sunshine. I got to be with other superstars. Like, none of those things were relevant in this case. So he's unique anyway. And the Bucks did I won't say everything right, but the Bucks did enough right things to put him in this position. And then he's rewarded and his patience is rewarded. So if other younger superstars around the league can see that model and see it as an example, then the real truth or the real gauge here is, can you then go to your front office and say, hey guys, I'm willing to stick around. I'll be loyal too. I'll stay in your smaller market. I'll be patient. But you better be as good as the Bucks were at assembling a team around him, and not as bad as, say, the Pelicans were about getting a team around Anthony Davis, or the Blazers around Damian Lillard, or the Wizards around Bradley Beal. It's still going to come down to that. It's still going to come down to, can you guys get me where I need to go? If a championship is that important, can I get it here?
I will stay. Just please give up 3 future first round picks, our starting point guard, and 2 pick swaps, and I'm yours.
It was a steep price. I do think, weirdly though, a part of it is going to come down to how people like us react to this championship. Because Howard, you mentioned those guys like Durant, LeBron, etc. They were pushed to dead ends, but they were also pushed by the people who, you know, maybe us 4 aren't necessarily the carnival barkers, but they were also pushed, I think, to an extent by the people who said, why haven't you won anything yet? What's wrong with your career? There's an issue here. And Giannis, I mean, when you think about guys like Lillard and Harden, they're also much older than Giannis was in the position where he had to sign the Supermax. So I think that also helped him too. But I do think, to Mike's point, I think part of what could influence that next generation is the fact that Durant's move to Golden State, it wasn't necessarily met with backlash as much as it was like people didn't know what to do with it. I think to this day, people, it really wasn't until that Brooklyn series, those last couple games when he's playing with Harden on one leg and Kyrie, where it felt like people finally really fully appreciated him again. Because those, the Warriors titles, it's not like they were less legitimate or anything like that. They're just, they were harder to put in context, right? They were harder to put in the context of what we've gotten used to with basketball, which is you lose a couple times and then you get over that mountaintop. I'm not questioning his greatness, just it was harder to kind of build that narrative that we've seen over the years. And they were almost met with like a shrug, right, when they won those 2 titles. Whereas I think the celebration Giannis is going to get, whether or not he wins another ring, he's going to be a legend in Milwaukee forever. He's going to be beloved forever. He's going to have that finals closeout performance forever. And I do think something like that could maybe weigh on a younger player who is in a similar position to where Giannis was, where they're 25 or 26 and they have to decide between the Supermax or not. And maybe that starts to come into play. I will just say to Howard and Chris's point about Giannis being rare, the fact that he didn't even know what Milwaukee, Wisconsin was when he got there, like, why would he care about New York or LA? Like, you know, Giannis had that like naivete when he first got to Milwaukee that was like adorable. And he's tweeting about things like, I'm having a smoothie for the first time. And yeah, like that, it all, frankly, I think aided, you know, that is a factor in what went into all this, where he almost didn't know any better. And it was, that's like beautiful. That like innocence, frankly, was beautiful. And his loyalty, I think, is to be commended. Like, I think he, you know, he's wearing like the t-shirt of the retired broadcaster after the game. I think he feels it's not like LeBron came to league like no matter who is picking number one that year is going to pick him. The Bucks had to take a chance on Giannis. They had to show a belief in him that none of us knew who he was going into that draft. And I think that also changes the situation a little bit, where I think he recognizes that the franchise took a chance on him, and that's not what guys like Ja and Zion and LeBron go through, where everyone knows they're going to be huge stars the moment they enter the draft.
Right, and I think Giannis is singular on the court, off the court, and we should also mention that Chris Middleton is one of the great crimes of this season. Was Chris Middleton not making the All-Star team? Didn't make sense to me when we were picking the teams. He just hit countless humongous shots in the NBA Finals and just did what I think a lot of people, it surprised some people, but if you've been watching Chris Middleton's career, if you've been watching the Milwaukee Bucks for the past few years, you know, he was definitely capable of it, including that. It was like the dagger last night when it looked like he was underwater. Everyone on the floor was in mud.
Oh, and he Devin somehow Booker's hits right that under pull-up. Him. Yeah.
Ooh. I know. Just incredible stuff. I want to throw a question at you guys that Rohan texted Chris and I last night as soon as the game ended, just the height of disrespect.
This is going to be Milwaukee. So I apologize in advance for Mike is throwing me under a cheese curd covered bus right now. This was talk amongst friends. I just thought, but here we go. Mike's got to blow up my spot. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
All is fair when we are co-hosts of a podcast, Rohan. So Rohan texted us last night. The Milwaukee Bucks are the worst title team since 2011. ... I'm just gonna.
Howard's reaction. Howard's so upset. Howard is livid.
All right, we'll let
Howard's regretting joining this podcast.
Yeah, he 100% is. Welcome to the Lion's Den, Howard. What is your take on Rohan's take? I guess
Rohan's question.
As if I had not experienced enough pain in the last several days. So I saw this in the notes. I cringed. I popped some more oxycodone. Still cringed. Look, if you're getting ready for a second career writing for one of the 24/7 Shoutfest shows,
legend.
This is a great first step.
Drag me. Absolutely drag me.
So here's what I immediately had to start like listing. All right.
Of course.
First of all, just a year ago. All right. Now, LeBron and AD are both top five players, right? Top seven, whatever, wherever AD falls. But there's a steep ass drop after those two. Like a steep ass, steep drop. I mean,
did you see KCP in game six? That's all.
No, Howard is 100% accurate.
So this is.
Yep.
All right.
He is.
Okay. I'm not done.
100%.
2019. Are Kawhi, Lowry, and Siakam miles better than Giannis, Middleton, Drew? No.
Fred VanVleet, post baby Fred VanVleet, though.
I mean, I guess it depends on who your big three is or whether we're going to a fourth. And are we throwing as he, you know, I don't even know who the fourth Buck then would be.
Bobby Portis Pat is Connaughton. Such a legend. Bobby it's Portis. Incredible.
Bobby,
I just have to before we finish, I wrote down this in my own little my notebook here. But I have to mention that the greatest moment last night of all the great moments was Bobby Portis getting the microphone passed
yes,
to him
and in starting the post-game interview. Let's go Bucks chant.
It was just like, what are we even doing right now? What universe is this? What timeline are we on?
As funny as it was, it turned into a genuinely beautiful moment when Malik Andrews asked him about what it meant. And he talked about not going to the bubble and spending that offseason with his mom. And yes. I'm like, about to cry. So good for you, Bobby Portis.
I was texting Malika about that this morning. I was like, that was incredible. Like, yeah. She did a really good job with that,
yeah,
by
did,
the way.
She did
like,
phenomenally.
She was great. Not, you know, as a friend of hers, like, I know that she was scripting out those questions, but Bobby Portis was not on the list of people she was expecting to speak to. So to get into that
Bobby conversation.
Incredible, right?
My daughter had plopped down on the couch and she's like, what are they chanting? I'm like, well, I mean, think about Bobby Portis, everything that everybody thought about Bobby Portis, not disparagingly necessarily, but like over the course of the whatever prior five, six, whatever years of his career, you would have never imagined in a million years there would be a moment where there would be crowds chanting Bobby, not least of which at the NBA finals where he had just contributed to a championship. Yeah. So Bobby chants are just awesome.
On the mic after the finals. Okay. So
back to it. All right, listen, 2015, 17, and 18, the Warriors. Okay, obviously the Warriors are better than the Bucks. 2016, LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. All right, peak LeBron and Kyrie that season. I'll give you that over the Bucks. 2014, you've got Kawhi plus the aging big three of the Spurs. I'll give you that one. 2012 and 13 is LeBron, Wade, Bosh, clearly better than this Bucks team. 2011 is the team that you're comparing them to, Dirk, Kidd, Tyson Chandler, Sean Marion, it becomes more of a collective. So I see where that's like the reference point. But even before, long before we got to that, I just even think the last 2 years, the LeBron and AD Lakers with the steep drop off, the Raptors who were really, really good, and Kawhi was great. But again, Kawhi, Lowry, Siakam, or Van Vliet compared to the top three of the Bucks. Like, I just, the idea that they are the quote unquote worst title team since 2011.
Worst. So here's okay. Can I please mildly defend myself now, even though everyone already hates me?
Can you? Let's see.
The worst conversation really stemmed from, in all seriousness, there were times this playoffs where I think, like I mentioned, Mike and I think were just really underwhelmed by the Bucks. And listen, in the finals, I think that was the best version of them we've seen in 3 years, was this specific series, in particular Giannis. And while, again, and this is not taking away from their championship performance, it was incredible. Giannis was awesome. I think Giannis at this current moment is the best basketball player in the known universe. I firmly believe that. And they deserve.
Disagree, but continue.
They deserve also everything.
Also disagree, but continue.
You know, they deserve everything that they're getting right now. Yes, you can argue Durant, but I just think we just saw what Giannis did. 50-point closeout. Even KD didn't do that. So.
Bobby Portis.
To me, I just have a hard time separating how much of a slog it was for them to get through such a wounded Brooklyn team. That is still etched into my mind to a degree. The fact that they're like a Kevin Durant half shoe size away, credit Chris Herring for that, shoe size away from like firing their coach. And listen, that's the nature of sports. That's the nature of this game. You could say that for every championship. There's a shot, play, et cetera, that happens. It's crazy, improbable, et cetera. So it's not fair to just pin that against the Bucks. And Howard listed the teams. If we also want to have the 2019 conversation, I mean, if the Warriors healthy, et cetera. So it's not me trying to denigrate the Bucks. It is mostly just, you know, I do think an element of me being provocative and being like, you know, let's compare them, but... They just is it fair to say it's maybe a more underwhelming title run than we've seen if we're really trying to investigate the question, which maybe we don't even have to. It just was, you know, a text amongst friends. It's now reached a podcast. So
I'm sorry, Rohan. I'm sorry, but I mean, my immediate response in the text, I believe, was you meant to say 2020, right? Like. But comparing title winners is whatever. But I get your point about how, right, like Harden is basically injured or 20% of himself. Kyrie steps on Giannis's ankle.
It felt like we saw the worst version and the best version of the Bucks within the same playoff run, which I think doesn't happen often.
Right. I credit them for being super resilient and, yes. You know, going down 0-2.
Winning a game. Winning a game 7 on the road, you're Teflon after that. You're Teflon after that. Beating KD in a game 7 on the road, like that was incredible. That was incredible.
Sure. And they were very close against the Atlanta Hawks 2-2 and in game 4, I believe. Yes, yeah. Game 4, Giannis has the injury and it looks like everything's over and then they come back and of course win the championship. I mean, I'll just throw it out there for you guys. Is there any other aspect of the Bucks or the finals or the season that you feel we haven't discussed that you want to? I mean, this episode did in fact go off the rails in a way that I'm personally not proud of, as trying to shepherd it as best I can. But is there anything we didn't mention? I mean, Mike Budenholzer.
I was going to say, we got to raise a glass to Bud, man.
Yep. I was at the arena last night and was sitting with Mark Spears and Sean Powell. And Sean, hopefully doesn't mind me sharing this, he was like, you know, to me, if the Bucks win this, and I actually think he was being pretty serious. He was like, if the Bucks win this, if I'm Mike Budenholzer, I take my trophy and then I just quit. And I was like, what? And
I would
he was
not
like,
do that.
He was like, there's no up from here, because they would have fired you had you lost to Brooklyn. The fans, you know, they're thrilled right now, but now there might even be more of an expectation, even though you shouldn't be the favorite next year. If you fail to do this again, you're going to get criticized for the same stuff from before, even though he just coached his ass off to finish off this series. Like, all the stuff that we've critiqued him for, with not making adjustments, he adjusted quite well in this series. And quite frankly, they did quite well after they lost Giannis in the last series. So you know, I literally like kind of took a step back from Sean when he said it was a really interesting kind of theory and like thought that, you know, that he would be in high demand elsewhere if he were to leave. I don't think anyone's leaving Giannis at age 26, but because you have Giannis at age 26, there are going to be expectations. And let's be honest, the league has shifted now to where winning a title does not give you like immunity forever unless you're Rick Carlisle, apparently. So, I mean, it's an interesting thought. Like, there would be demand for him elsewhere.
That one kind of convinced me. You kind of convinced me there a little bit. There's something to be said about walking away on top. You know, that's all I'll say. And
This take is ludicrous.
No way. It's the George Costanza, man.
Making like $5-6 million a year.
George Costanza is a buffoon. That's
Listen, let me play the devil's advocate to Mike here.
Go ahead, play Costanza. Yeah, go ahead.
I just think Chris brings up a good point, which is, what's he going to come back to? Because anything short of a finals trip, his job is right back in jeopardy, right? Like, it would shock you if he got fired if they lose in the second round to Brooklyn next year? It would not shock me. People look for a scapegoat, and he's the easy one every year. And we've all definitely taken turns criticizing Mike Budenholzer. There's no doubt about it. And I just think that, he's had a long career. He's had a successful career, not only as a head coach, but as an assistant. And it doesn't mean you walk away forever, but maybe you step aside for a couple of seasons and find a new challenge eventually. But I don't know that it's like necessary that just because you win one, you got to rack up all these chances. I think it's actually a very interesting discussion about fulfillment and criticism and et cetera. And that's my opinion.
Look, I will say this just to separate what I'm saying from what Rohan was saying. I think what Sean was saying. Sean's idea. I don't want anybody on this podcast thinking that this was my idea. This was Sean Powell that said this.
So you don't agree either?
I agree. I'm saying that it's a fascinating thought. But what I think Sean was saying is that get out now while you can. You have you're bestowed as a champion at this point. And it makes you more valuable in the marketplace. And there are teams that would love to have you come in and change their program the way that he changed Milwaukee's. I mean, like, you can't take that from him. And quite frankly, you can't take this championship from him. But there is a chance now that there are more expectations, even though I think anybody should look at that roster and say you can't call it that ludicrous or look at it and say it's that crazy when you were just saying a minute ago, this is the most underwhelming team potentially since X, Y, or Z. So it is a weird situation. And if we're talking about whether Phoenix will make it back, I think it's just as fair to say whether Milwaukee will and to have that question, particularly if Brooklyn is going to be healthy. That's the big thing.
If his job was hinging on a freaking shoe being too big, I think that's a good argument for why maybe, he's better off taking some time to himself and enjoying his success.
But I don't think he would take the time off. I think it would be to go take another gig right now somewhere else.
Right.
But that would be weird. I don't know that we've seen that before. I don't know. Well, Howard's been in the game a little bit longer.
You don't leave a generational player.
Yeah. Yes.
You don't leave. If you're an NBA coach, you do not leave a generational player, two-time MVP and now finals MVP and defending champion, to go explore the market. You just don't. And if you got to get fired 2 months into next season because you're only 10 games over 500 instead of 20, fine. You walk away with all your money. You get the next job the next year. You're just as marketable as you were before. Unless your like physical or mental health is somehow in peril, you don't walk away from one of these jobs in the NBA, especially when you're coaching a generational player. You just don't. Like, interesting thought exercise, but also he's not at that stage of his career. He's not Greg Popovich, his mentor. He's not at the end of his career. He's still early in his head coaching, career. I don't see a single reason why he would do that now. As for the East, by the way, the Nets are still no guarantee. Like,
oh, definitely.
We're just all taking for granted that a full season together and these guys will be magically healthy. I mean, Harden was almost bulletproof up until now, so he probably is fine. But Kyrie's always hurt, and Kevin Durant is still a few years removed from an Achilles. The idea that because he had a spectacular partial season, And let's remember, he missed a big-ass chunk of the season. Just because he was dominant for part of the regular season and dominant in the playoffs on the Achilles doesn't mean he's in the clear. You're never in the clear once you've had the Achilles. You just aren't. The history of the Achilles is not you come back and you're no longer yourself. It's that if you are yourself, you might not be for very much longer, or certainly not as long as you expected to be before you had injured it. Again, I'm not wishing this on him. I'm not trying to be dour about it. I hope Kevin Durant is dominant for at least the next 5 years. He's one of the most enjoyable players we've ever seen. He's incredible. But to say that the Nets are somehow a lock once they're healthy, the once they're healthy part is really tricky, and they still got to rebuild that supporting cast. So, like, the Bucks absolutely can repeat. The Sixers are, who knows what's going on with the Sixers. The rest of the East, the Celtics need work. The Raptors need work. The Knicks need plenty. The Hawks need some. Like, the Bucks will have obstacles. They absolutely will. But they will walk into next season much closer to being able to repeat in the East than the Suns will in the West.
Is it irresponsible of me to ask for predictions coming out of each conference?
That seems like a good note to end on. Let's put a pin in it with some way too early predictions, and then we can look back a year later and remember how mean everyone was to me on this podcast.
Rohan, obviously, you got to kick things off.
I don't think so. I think Mike, you've just been like the rabble rouser this whole podcast, just dropping little bombs
because he outed your text
everywhere.
You're never going to get over that.
Just neatly placing a banana peel in front of me every few minutes. So I think Mike, you could kick us off because it was also your idea.
Okay, ooh, fair enough.
Tables have turned.
And you actually have to make a pick here. You can't do the thing where you list like four teams each that might have a good chance. I want to hear a pick.
Okay. I guess I'll start in the West. I'm still a Kawhi Leonard believer. I'm still a Los Angeles Clippers believer.
Wow.
And
with his ACL too?
Hey, you know, it's partial, you know? Partial. He could be back in 6 months. We don't know. It's wow. Very fluid. Okay. Shout out to Terrence Mann. He's going to be filling in, doing great work all next season.
They got to bring back Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, that's a big question mark. Yeah. And I will be having Shelby edit this if Reggie Jackson leaves in free agency.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm going to be stubborn and I'm going to go. I'm going to go with the Clippers.
Wow.
Howard made some great points about the Nets, but I'm betting on their health, even though I have questions about their depth. And I think they're going to lose Blake probably. They're going to lose a lot of people, but I think that they can replenish at the waiver wire as they did this past season. So I'm going to go. Yeah. I'm gonna go Clippers over Nets in the finals.
We're picking a winner too.
Yeah, damn. Yeah.
Wow, we're doing the whole thing. Okay,
I'll go. Give me. I'll take the Lakers because I think they're gonna get a rejuvenated LeBron and AD. I think they'll find a way to like sprinkle some Lakers dust around the league and pick up an impactful player. The Lakers, for what it's worth, all the stuff they went through this season. The Schroeder, unhappy, Gasol, whatever. Their starting five until people started getting hurt was running roughshod all over the league, and they still had one of the best defenses. So I'll take the Lakers, and I have them losing to the Brooklyn Nets, who I think, even if all three of those guys only play like 9 games together again during the regular season, frankly, I think as long as Durant is healthy in the playoffs and one more of them is, I think they're an absolute force. So I'll go with the Nets over the Lakers in a 7-game thriller.
Yeah.
Wow, you're actually going to games. Now we're getting ridiculous.
This is too specific.
We're
going
to need a final score.
Tiebreaker.
Finals MVP.
Yeah, yeah.
Who had
home
court
advantage? Who's on the mic? Who's on the mic during the post game? Yeah.
Which hotel did I stay in?
Yeah.
I'm going to piss off all of the people who have been listening this long and say that I do think if I have to predict right now, I'll go Nets because I like to go into a season. I like to go into a season assuming health.
Yes.
But not for guys who are currently out injured, right? So I'm not assuming Kawhi Leonard health because we know he's still recovering from ACL. I think it's Nets and Nuggets. I think it's Nets over Nuggets. Oh,
let's go with the Nuggets pick. Inspired.
I'm really inspired.
That's a good one.
It's kind of process of elimination. Like, I don't know. Like, I'd like to think the Suns can just run this back and do the same thing. I'm not sure about Chris Paul's age and effectiveness next year. I'm not sure about LeBron's effectiveness. And I'm not sure, frankly, about the Lakers' ability to get that roster back up to snuff around him and AD. I'm just not. Mm-hmm. I'm not confident that the Jazz can do much more to improve what they have. I think they've hit their ceiling, most likely. I'd like to assume health about the Warriors, but like Kawhi, like Clay's coming back from back-to-back Achilles and ACL, and they got a lot of work to do. So I mean, listen, we're doing this on July 21st. We were days away from a week from the draft.
I'm sorry.
Days from a week from, and plus from or whatever week and a half, 2 weeks from free agency. Like, a lot's gonna happen, and we're going to change this literally 2 weeks from now. But if I had to guess right now, Nets and Nuggets seems plausible.
Wow. You guys are I was going to say this earlier when Rohan said he was going to put the Nuggets in his top four. I'm like, you guys are assuming a lot of the Nuggets. It seems like you guys are assuming that Jamal Murray will come back, which everybody handles their ACL injuries differently.
They want a playoff series with Campazzo and Austin Rivers.
No, I get that part of it.
He's young.
To me, if you're filling in with like a borderline free agent point guard, it's one thing. If you think Murray's going to be back and like healthy and everything, then yeah, I think you can maybe catapult them in that conversation. Without him, I don't know. And it's interesting because I think it's very, very possible to come back from ACLs before a full year is up, but you also see guys that just sit out the whole next season. So it'll be really interesting to see the way he handles that. I don't know. For the hell of it, I'll go with something different since everybody's picking Brooklyn, which, by the way, I will say I'm kind of with Rohan here, and and Howard alluded to this too. You want to assume health until you feel like there's a reason you can or that you shouldn't. I think two of Brooklyn's three guys, if they can roll out there, I mean, they were going to beat Milwaukee if they had two fully healthy guys of the three, seemingly. So it's really hard to pick against them. I will just say, though, as a caveat, I'm really interested to see how Philly handles Ben Simmons because – you could potentially get something really useful back for him. I don't think it has to be an all-star caliber player necessarily. If you get a couple of pieces that just fit that team really well, would I favor that Philly version over Brooklyn? I'm not sure. So I'll go ahead and I'll be like you guys and pick Brooklyn for now. But if Philly does the right things with that trade, I would put them ahead of Milwaukee.
Yes, I like this. I like
and
this.
And I would take the Warriors and the West. I would take the Warriors. Ooh, the West.
Warriors, Sixers, the battle for old Philadelphia, huh? How about that?
just because, I think that it's very easy to see how they can kind of make that team pretty scary. They just kind of have to make a decision about what they're doing with Wiseman and if they're going to keep Wiggins. And if not, you can get something really nice and shiny for that fits the team really well. And Clay is the big if there, but he's not someone that relied an absolute ton on his athleticism, in a way where, he defensively maybe, and obviously he's running around screens and stuff like that. But, for guys that rely totally on their athleticism, I would worry about a little bit more than I would with Clay.
That's a great pick. You don't even need to defend it as much as you're defending it. That's a great pick.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Rohan.
Yeah.
That's
called support right there.
I'm taking notes right now. I was going to bring up the Miami Heat, who I think are a sleeper next season, and they should have a really interesting
Bienvenidos. Bienvenidos, baby.
Yeah. Philly's screwed. They're all done. I'm sorry.
Nah. They're going to get – what? They get a shooter back for Simmons, and they're in business.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I do like Miami as a sleeper pick in the East. Yeah. I neglected to mention them. That's a great call because we know they've got cap room and a super aggressive and creative front office. The Heat will be heard from again. I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so is that today's show, everybody? Does anyone else have anything they want to say? Any other bold predictions heading into next season?
Can I just like hit this real quick though? Like,
of course.
Adam Silver almost looked just relieved to get to that trophy presentation last night. Maybe it's a little it's a little projection, but
so
I think
great.
It's true too. Like, and so you know what? Kudos to the NBA for getting through it. It wasn't ever clear that we were actually going to get to the finish line of this season, that they were going to be able to award a trophy. When we were thinking back in January with the Wizards basically having 2 weeks of their schedule just like wiped out, postponements left and right, all the COVID stuff that everybody had to go through. The NBA got us back, us the media, back into press conferences again. Thank you, NBA, for that. The conference finals and finals, we had members of the print media back in the room with players and coaches. That was fantastic. A small bit of normalcy back. Look forward to full normalcy in the fall, if this country does things smartly for once. So just the fact that the league got there last night, it was just great to see. It was great to see a championship celebration in a full packed building with people chanting Bobby or whatever else they wanted to chant. Given the weird, awkward silence echoing of that gym in Florida in Orlando last year when the Lakers won and how weird that was. So just great to see that happen last night, because it wasn't so long ago that we weren't sure what it would look like or if we'd get there again. So that was all great. And then, like, as I said earlier, I was alluding to this, just so many great moments of just like pure humanity last night. Mm-hmm. Monty Williams going and talking to the Bucks and congratulating them and how inspiring and how much they taught him or gave to him just in competition, his pain at the podium of losing, Chris Paul's anguish at the podium, Giannis's giddiness, Giannis and Chris Middleton and their little buddy comedy, and those guys, like, you could just tell that those guys genuinely love each other as teammates and friends. The sport, we always say it's a business, and we talk about all these business things, and we say, you know, it's more than a business, and it's more than just the sport. It's also more than matchups and X's and O's and all this other stuff that we talk about. Like, bottom line is it's humanity, it's relationships, and it's the emotions of it. It's the drama of it that pulls us all back in. And we got all of it in this series, and we got all of it last night. And that was fantastic, especially for a series that some people, I don't know who, but somebody out there allegedly thought, well, because we didn't have LeBron or Curry or the big markets, that it would not be great. I don't know who those people are. I think it's the people who keep just manufacturing fake debates so that they can keep having them. But it was fantastic. And again, the emotional finish last night was fantastic.
That was all really well said, Howard. And I think that's a really good place for us to wrap up today's show. Thank you to all of our listeners for sending in fantastic emails all season long. Please keep them coming. We're not going to go anywhere in the off season. So openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. And also subscribe to the Crossover Pod, where Howard and Chris Mannix do a fantastic job. No, you can interrupt. Go ahead. Yeah.
Can I just give a couple quick shout outs here, Mike? I just want to shout out, first of all, our NBA staff. How about our NBA staff? Working with all you guys, a lot of fun, a great season. I want to shout out our editors, Jarrell Harris, Mark Bechtel, a.k.a. Marcus Bechtel. And also, Howard, you mentioned the humanity of this. I just also want to say, like, the people who will never, ever get talked about are the people who, like, literally put these games on in arenas, who I think are, like, really in such a precarious position when it comes to working through this pandemic, everything, like, it takes so much to put this season on. Like, we're all indebted to so many people who let us do this job. And, like, we get to do the fun part. And so many people have to do the hard part of literally getting these games on. So it's been a lot of fun. Like, we're all really privileged to get to do this. And it's been an awesome season. I'm already so looking forward to the next one.
No, and yeah, in all seriousness, like, shout out to everyone who Rohan mentioned, everyone we're indebted to for doing our jobs, and the editors at SI and podcast listeners and everybody. So on that note, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe and enjoy the off season. We go. We go. We go.